Hello, grandkids, and welcome to Stunt Granny Presents OPA number 50, Ken.
Dun, 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 dun.
Although I'm looking forward to having one for each week of the year. I guess I've been counting down to 52, so 50 doesn't seem that special for me.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. 50, I mean, it's a big milestone, I gotta say.
It is usually a big milestone. I don't know why I've been looking for the every week, I guess, for some type of consistency, some results, by golly. even if we're at 308, 309? 308. I had 307 and 308 for Stunt Granny this week.
Right.
Since I went to Money in the Bank earlier this week, I'm trying to timestamp like we did last week,
just so people know exactly when we're recording.
Yeah, just so people know.
I'm sure the people love this. Yeah,
we're the real deal. We're the real McCoy.
But we
are not what some programmer dreamt up, Ken. We are not part of the Matrix.
Oh. That's a good point, Kevin, because you remember in The Matrix, sometimes there was glitches, and we are glitch-free here. But that's not true of all code, you know, unfortunately. A lot of things have glitches.
Oh,
a lot of glitches out there.
You know what? I feel like there are less now. Like, it is frustrating, but it is less frustrating than it used to be.
Yeah, I mean, but I guess they're still kind of, it's maybe, like, I made Kevin, and actually we should say that we started a new feature, I guess. We'll see how popular it is here with the grandkids, as you like to call them. OPA Book Club.
Yes, I did like this idea before it even dawning on me that it had some relation to the Oprah Book Club. I was just like, oh, okay, I've got it even more now. I'm an idiot, but that's okay.
Okay, that just explains it for our more contemplative listeners, maybe? Yeah, so we are talking about a long-form article this week. Not really a book, I suppose, but it kind of feels like reading it.
It was long enough for me to question when it ended. It did not help that...
You seemed to question if it ended.
I did question if it ended. I liked how at some point I started to scroll down very quickly, and the little robot that hosts the article asked me how quick I could read.
That's funny.
Which I did find quite amusing. And I did not get to the end of the article even after the robot questioned me. So, yes, I only read, part two. I neglected part one except for prep. Because in the post that you had inserted in our fine program, Evernote, it started at number two. So I was under the impression that number one was not important, and I do see that they are laying the groundwork for the whole article.
Right, yeah.
Which is at least a little bit important.
Yeah, it kind of sets up everything, so if you don't get that, then you're kind of screwed. So definitely start with the first section.
We're only going to be covering the first two sections here this week. Ken wants to continue on this path, and I think we've made a habit out of trying to interweave our shows anyway, so this is just another way to do it.
Yeah, this could be a long time follow-along topic, because it's a real long article, and you're going to need to let it sink in a little bit, probably. But,
yeah, there was a lot to sink in. It was a little tough.
But I liked it just because, I guess, you know, I've been getting into coding here lately, so I found, like, there's not really a lot of, like, general purpose kind of resources out there, just, like, big picture, I guess, like, what's going on, and this really just kind of all ties it together. in a sort of, in an entertaining way, I guess, but you kind of have to, and it's also a rare example of a second person story, style narration, where parts of it is that the story is, told from your perspective. So,
oh, right.
You are a character in the story.
In the charade.
as it's being told.
When you go to the actual website, it is very, the background is very distracting.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. It's like kind of designed by a crazy person. And then you scroll down and they have kind of a, a mocking sort of, little paperclip guy, and a lot of the art from like Windows, you know, Word back in the day.
Right. Yes, I very much got that feeling, which did make me laugh.
And the graphics are kind of weirdly retro. I don't know. It's pretty crazy. Pretty crazy looking article. So check it out. And yeah, you mentioned the It noticing that you're scrolling too fast.
yeah, I mean, that's also one of those things that I don't think the paperclip tutorial would have been able to do for you. This thing is such a... They did such a good job coding this little thing, though, that it recognized that I was scrolling entirely too fast to actually be reading. Right. I don't care if you're a speed reader. I was going too fast for that.
Yeah, I think he was mocking you there, but, you know, it's all good fun. Like, there's, I guess as a, yeah, somebody who works on web pages, like, it's kind of weird, like, all websites are just, like, you can, there's so much possibility for stuff, but they're all just basically, like, a page with words, like...
In graphics.
Yeah, with, like, picture here, picture there, like, you know, it's kind of...
Yeah.
This makes you think there could be something more, I guess.
Yeah, there's definitely a different, there's just a different order to things. That's really all that it is. And, the funny thing was I still didn't feel like I had a hard time deciphering at least part two of this article.
I guess that makes sense.
It would have worked, to me it works without that first part, but it does do a good job because, that first part's kind of short. And, but it does set up the whole situation about why you're learning about coding, too.
Yeah. So, and, you know, I was reading this on a mobile phone, and it did not, allow me to see some of the stuff either. It's got it's a scaled down version of it, I guess. But I'm just playing with this little, simulated circuitry here, you can actually see how the electricity current would move through the circuitry, which is kind of cool.
Right.
But, yeah, so I guess the first part starts the story off, the narrative, and he's talking about, you're basically a person at a company in charge of this new, web, you know, platform that you're coming out with that's supposed to be something your company can use, you know, to be more efficient. Everybody's complaining about the website you have now. And you're trying to come up with something, but you really don't understand what's going on.
I mean, in some ways it seems naive. At least kind of a little bit of that premise. I don't feel like you need to understand what is going on in the coding to know what you want in your website. I feel like you just need to have a look, and even if you don't understand Java or C++, you can get a general idea of what you want to do and how kind of complex it is.
Yeah. For me it was like, the attitude that you have in the story of being like, things are always going to be late and over budget when it comes to software. Like when it comes to, you know, writing a new website, like it's never, you know, on time. And like, it's like, you don't, without understanding kind of everything that goes into it, I guess.
Oh. Yeah, but, I mean, it does take time. I mean, and there are still probably improvements that I would like to do to Stunt Granny itself. And it is kind of funny that we did change formats. I think everything looks nicer, and pretty much no one's made a comment.
Well, we can certainly have an update. I think we should maybe have a web update meeting sort of off mic at some point. So that could be a little tease for some of our listeners out there where we can switch some stuff up. But, you know, I think as you get later in the article, like part of it is like the web, like the programmers taking advantage of management not understanding how things work.
Oh, right.
So kind of like it behooves your character, I guess, to actually understand what's going on so they can effectively manage it, I guess. As you follow along, that's kind of the arc of the story. Spoiler.
Spoiler alert.
But yeah, this is a so the second chapter, I guess, or section.
Right. It really starts with the basics, which was another reason why it was somewhat easy to follow. Because
mm-hmm.
It starts to describe, really, how the function of a computer works.
Yes. So,
And how it starts from, you know, touching a button that says A to how it actually... Well, really, even start back at... what's the 101 binary?
Yeah.
They start back with binary, and they move on from there. So, I mean, they do a good job of trying to build your knowledge from, you know, very narrow and the very basic up until something more complicated.
Yeah, so, like, basically it starts with, you know, turning circuits on and off and, you know, checking to see what the status of things are to store information, and then building on top of that, and then... coming up with a programming language that can control the things that are going on underneath that. And then you're coming up with like new tools that help you to like manage that program or language that you had before, or like improvements to the language. So it's like, I mean, everything is kind of like in flux all the time. So it's kind of wild. I had my wife start to read this article, and it was, I think, blowing her mind a little bit too.
Yeah, I'm not sure if the lady would. I think she'd tap out probably by the end of the first part.
The second part also has a nice little gif of Steve Ballmer, or is that, am I saying that right?
Yes.
From Microsoft, sweatily jumping around on stage and yelling, "Developers, developers, developers," because he was so pumped about being able to sell Windows software. Which is like a totally... I mean, they point out, like, it costs nothing to actually really produce software. Like, well, to replicate it. Like, once it's already made, like...
Yeah, it's easy. It's free.
It's like nothing, almost.
Right.
Yeah.
So, it takes the electricity to put it onto some type of device.
But it's, like, already good... You know, to make a new one, it's very simple. So that's how Microsoft was, and the reason that he was so excited about that, those developers, is because they were able to make so much money for them because they could just mass produce and sell out to the computer manufacturers, really, who are, you know, need an operating system. So like they were just minting money there back in the 90s, early 2000s.
Yeah, and that was kind of the funny thing that they did mention, because I remember having to look at computers for architecture school, and I ended up going with the Gateway. Like, you know, I had this choice. Now it's just like, I have a Mac now, but then in some ways you can still just go out and buy pretty much anything, and it's going to be fine.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's the thing with hardware, I guess, that they were saying, is like, It's gotten, well, I guess, you know, Apple has certainly done a good job at making hardware that people want to buy, being probably the richest company in the world at the moment. But, yeah, this, I mean, they talked about kind of the history of Microsoft and how they ended up getting into trouble because of this open source software. And that's something that I wasn't really aware of before I started looking into coding. It's like people, because this software is, or the code is easy to reproduce, like, it's if you share it with somebody, then it's like, not like you're losing something, right, necessarily?
Right.
Like, you can easily share your code, and other people can just use it to make their lives a little easier, I guess you could say. And I didn't realize that how much people share code online. It's quite a lot. And a lot of it is what they say it call is open source, meaning that you're free to use that then in any way that you want to, as long as whatever you make with it is also open source. So it's like a continual kind of loop of goodness, I guess.
So. Yeah, and I've only heard about that in a couple of different instances. I know one of our good friends, who will remain nameless, does not like, I guess Apple stole some open source material and then doesn't let people use it now, like it was part of the Linux system. I have no idea what the guy's argument is, and I haven't really looked into it, to be completely honest with you.
Oh, well, I think there is a, like, you know, the Apple is running on something that's like Linux, but I don't think it was ported from Linux. At least that's my understanding. So, I don't know. Maybe he's a little confused. Or maybe he knows something that none of us know. Maybe he was in the room when Steve Jobs was bugging Linus Torvalds' room at night, so the creator of Linux, so he could get all his secrets. Well, you don't have to do that. It's open source. They published the source.
Right.
So, then it just kind of gets into, like, the nature of what software is, I guess, you know, and, like, how a computer actually understands it. I mean, it's always... yeah, and these little
computer guys. The graphics are very informative and help out.
I like the little caption on this guy.
Because I did not have... This is another thing that when I switched the article, I'm like, oh, this would have been nice. Yeah, earlier, so. there were some benefits to going straight to the source there. So what I tweeted out earlier is definitely the way to go. Rather than looking at it through Evernote.
Don't clip it through Evernote and try to read it that way, because you're going to be disappointed. Yeah, just check out the original article, because you get these little, little lovely, little humorous, weird block people talking to you. And, yeah, talking about how everything is a tree. Even this picture of a tree is a tree.
Yes, it is a tree of notes. It is not a kind of growing tree.
Not a giving tree, either.
No, it is not a giving tree.
That was a good book, though.
Although it does give you information on your screen.
Mm-hmm. It's true.
Oh, I don't know why I thought you could go somewhere with that.
Well, yeah, I mean... It then proceeds to go on to, like, how a computer understands what you're trying to get it to do. What an algorithm is. Have you ever wondered what an algorithm is? People are talking about them a lot.
That was kind of funny. I had a laugh about that, that algorithm really is not as complex as it's made to sound sometimes.
Right. It's just a, basically, a series of instructions on how to do something. Is basically an algorithm. So when people are talking about Facebook's algorithm, I mean, I guess they're really talking about, like, how what the decisions are that the program makes, like, what to decide what you see or what other people see or that sort of stuff, I guess. Right. But really, it's software that is all working together. It's not like the, and that is made up like of a whole lot of algorithms, if that makes sense. Because there's all these little rules going off all different places, depending on what people reacting to people doing things. And, at the end of the day, it makes Facebook.
Yeah. That is really kind of ridiculous. Because all it takes is me looking at one web page for the commercials to change on Facebook. And it's just like, I just looked at this. I don't need to look at it again.
Yeah, it's like...
That's why I just went and shopped there. Like, you didn't predict that I was going to shop there. You're just learning that I just shopped there. Thank you very much.
Well, a little, inside baseball, they have, like, these ways of tracking you from one place to another between sites. So, there's, like, these little invisible pixels that it's like a one transparent pixel, right?
Uh-huh.
Somewhere on the website, but your computer has to go out and load that page, or has to load that pixel from the advertiser server, because that's where the location is of it.
Oh, okay.
And then when you do that, then they can get your information because you're reaching out to them. Like your computer, your browser is reaching out to them to get that pixel, which you don't even see, but then they're able to like correlate you with, you know, you visiting the site and then show you ads later. So that's fun.
Gotcha. Yeah, yeah. I that's how that works.
That's a bonus that was not in the article.
I did like that they mentioned that nothing was magic in the article, because I do have a habit of calling it a magic box.
Yes. And this reminds me a little bit of another article I read where somebody was trying to make like a basic mail program, and then because they were like frustrated with the mail programs that they had. And then they realized how hard it is even to write a mail program that just plain works, let alone has these cool features that you're thinking of. all like the little pieces that go into it, you know.
Right.
It's like every little thing you've got to tell this computer to do. Because I guess that's the other thing. Computers are not better at doing things than we are, really. It's just that they're a lot faster. And then being so much faster, it's kind of a deal breaker, or game changer. That's what I'm looking for.
And I always say this too, it's the changes that are more important than the actual doing. Like, I guess I always think about it in terms of my job, because I could probably draw a set of plans in the same time it takes me to do it in CAD.
Right.
But when it comes to changing things, that is where the money is in the software.
Yeah.
The repeatable things that you can't do in drawing.
Right.
Are way better on the computer. And that was certainly a point that they harped on.
Yeah. And it's the same with, you know, I guess the classic business example is Excel, which... Before that, people actually had spread sheets of paper that they wrote all this stuff on and, you know, calculated the answers to and wrote them down. So, like, just, like, the chance for human error there and that kind of thing. I mean, AutoCAD is still an advantage, but I think in some places it's, like, even more of an advantage to be using a computer that can... you know, always give you the right math answer whenever you're doing something or...
Well, it's a small office thing for me, at least. It's nice being able to calculate electrical loads through spreadsheets. That was something that we did not do for a while, but we got that together. And it's quite handy.
So this is...
That saves time. You know,
Kevin, so whoever set that spreadsheet up was doing some coding, because that's really what goes into it.
Yes. Yes, he was doing some coding, because he had to read a bunch of coding stuff.
So, yeah, I think that's how I got interested in it, was using Excel, and it's just you can make these very tedious algorithms, I guess. There's that word tedious again, Kevin. You're just talking about that.
It is everywhere.
But a computer will do them, like, all will check off all those boxes, like, so quick that when you, like, it's amazing, like, how fast it seems like when you go to, like, McDonald's or something and they swipe your card. Like, it's like, boom, done, like, as soon as they swipe it.
Yeah, the speed at which things go now is pretty crazy.
Yeah.
Because it's not instantaneous, but it is almost that.
Yeah, and it just is, you know, I guess that is what Silicon Valley is all about. Not the TV show, but the actual place. In that they're yes. trying to kind of, what would you say, streamline everything, right? Make everything as fast as possible. And I guess that's kind of what's happening to our world. It's all through software. And it's pretty crazy. From the software in our phones and computers.
Oh, yeah, there is software everywhere.
To our televisions. There's software in there for your different menus and whatnot.
Yeah, because I guess maybe I didn't think about it, but they were just talking about the programs just to even see your guide.
Your guide?
TV guide. Yeah, exactly. When you pull it up on your TV there.
Yeah, I'm sure that represents many hours of, like, frustration of somebody, like, why the hell isn't this working? Until they get it right. And then it's reliably working, and then it's like magic. But in reality, there was so many hours of work going on there that nobody really saw, unless you were part of that project, I guess. But, you know, that's something that I've gotten more of an appreciation of for Apple, is like how very polished all their stuff looks. Like, and then, like... Right. You start to realize, like, okay, they took a lot of time just to get this everything working so good, and then they took a lot of time on top of that just making everything looking so good, that it's really pretty impressive. But I think that kind of brings us to about the end of our code talk for the week, or here.
our ongoing investigation.
Is code? We'll continue with this... later, at a different date.
And I know that everyone's just really hanging on their on the last word about that one. And I did, like, this was another topic that to me was somewhat similar that I had sent to you the previous week. You know, all the sports topics were just breaking, and we had to go with them.
Sure. It was a big week for sports. There's a lot going on.
Right, and now there's just baseball left.
Oh, yeah.
One week, everything's going crazy. Oh. Next week, champions are determined. You know what? And we got baseball and Women's World Cup left.
I hate to... Yeah, I almost tweeted or sent an article that dealt with basketball and kind of like how the three-point... shot has become so more common, and that's kind of like how the I feel like that had a lot to do with how the Cavs lost because of the 3-point shooting of the Golden State Warriors.
That was part of it. The other part was losing two of their best players.
That's gonna hurt you too.
That does nobody favors, because that's it. Even as they were losing, I was talking to our good buddy Shahid, and he goes, yeah, it's tough to win when you're playing 1-on-5. It's like, yeah, I would imagine that's tough.
But damn, if he didn't keep them in those games for... I mean, they were up there at one point in the series. That's pretty impressive.
They were up 2-1 and then lost 3 straight. But that was still...
Yeah, that's a little OPA region action.
Certainly.
Yes, that's what we've been... there's been a little bit of a buzz in the air, I guess, in the this region with the Cavs having been in the playoffs. But now, Cleveland, unfortunately, the drought continues up there. They're they have not had a championship in that city for a long time.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's been a long time, but you know what's been around an even longer time, Kevin?
What has been around even longer, Ken?
I would say, how about dinosaur feathers?
Wow, you skipped the topic that I was trying to segue into.
Oh, wow.
And segued into another one. So we will go with it. We have had enough with technology. Although this is technology, too.
Well, it's dinosaurs, though.
Yeah, but a microscope, which was used as an example in the previous coding article.
Oh, right.
Well, they were talking about a telescope.
But this was an electron microscope, I believe.
Yes.
Which would have to be programmed at some point to be able to actually make sense of what you're looking at there. Because you have to keep track of where the little electrons are going, I would think. But the electron microscope just is a cool thing, I think, you know? I'm just going to go out there and let people know I'm pro-electron microscope. The idea of, like, being able to see something, quote-unquote, that is smaller than the actual light photons would let you see normally is, that's pretty badass.
Well, and it's pretty badass, really, I loved that somebody, I should check that article, because it's not just a somebody. The one scientist that, came up with the idea to actually dissolve... Mary Schweitzer.
Oh, yeah.
Who initially found blood cells in dinosaur bones. Was the first person to do this back in 2006, I believe, or 7.
I think, did she use acid to dissolve, like, the hard part of the, like,
of the
fossil?
The bone. Yeah.
Well, yeah, because the fossil is, like, it turns to stone, like, over time, like, the mineral, whatever, accretion. But they were able to get that part off of there, and underneath was actual, like, soft tissue. Like, they found, using this electron microscope, like, blood vessels, right? Or no, blood cells, red blood cells, and also these little structures that kind of look like... I don't know if you'd say they're feathers, but it's based off the same material in these complicated structures, I guess.
Well, yeah, and the blood cells are different than the feathers because that's, it's same article, but they showed the fossils, and I guess this was something that over the weekend, because Jurassic World came out last week.
Oh, yeah, there we go.
More dating.
Tie-in. Sponsored this week by Jurassic World. So, yeah. And I did not see that movie, but...
No, I have not seen it either.
Apparently, it set a record for the most amount of money that a movie has ever made in its first weekend, so... Chris Pratt has got to be pretty happy with himself, if you ask me. The guy is a pretty... seems to be a pretty darn bankable movie star.
Yeah, well, he's doing okay for himself.
Yeah, I think so.
Although everyone, at least that I saw on the Twitters, was mentioning the fact that whatever his next movie is with Jennifer Lawrence, she's getting paid more.
Ooh, what if that is causing any tensions on set, you know? Sometimes when the woman makes more money, it causes tensions, you know? What am I, like 1956 here?
What am I here?
What am I? Well, I guess technically it's still going on in the current day that women tend to make less money, so I probably should point that out, I guess, or at least acknowledge it. Speaking of women, this scientist, had the idea to destroy the fossil, basically, to be able to see, like, what was going on inside of it. which was something that no one, like, every, I think the other people they interviewed in the article were like,
holy, you're crazy. Why are you doing this?
Yeah. But it seems to, like, these were not good specimens, I guess, quote unquote. So, like, they were maybe more or less, I guess, valuable. So they were, she was able to destroy these, I guess. She was able to get hold of them somehow. But they were able to find the tissue inside, which makes them think that it might be more common than anybody had ever thought before. So there could be lots of dinosaur tissue out there.
Yeah, because they have also now found it, looking at it through that, the same electron microscope.
Mm-hmm.
Which I approve of. They found it on, bone itself.
Yeah.
So that's pretty cool too. Yeah, I mean, it's just pretty cool. And I had no idea because, this article mentioned the feathers that you were talking about on the dinosaurs.
Yes.
But, I was watching a lot of, it was either Discovery Channel or National Geographic over the weekend. And,
getting some education.
Yeah, getting some education. And they were doing dino autopsies, which was cracking me up.
Oh.
They had these two guys doing a fake, virtual, this is how it would be like.
Well, that is a weird thing.
Yeah, it was pretty strange to see, to be completely honest with you.
This week, dinosaur cremations. There are no dinosaurs left, of course.
Well,
but if there were, well, and they were to be cremated, this might be what it looks like. Yeah, I don't know.
It honestly seems like something that, you know, it's... From the reads of this article, it seemed like they were jumping to conclusions with the TV show in some ways.
I would think so,
because
yeah.
Because it seems like there's still... we didn't complete... we have some idea about their body structure because of the bones.
Right. You can tell. And make guesses, really. I mean, because you're not 100% seeing it.
Right.
Obviously, but... you can make a best guess based on the way the bones fit together, but to be able to see like how, like they said, like the little, the differences in how those fibers form together is kind of a clue to like compare with other birds or other, fossils to be able to see like how things evolved over time and changed in a kind of more detailed way than they were ever able to before. And maybe be able to see more subtle connections than what they were aware of and, you know, be able to learn something new. So,
yeah, I mean, they're definitely helping or hoping to be able to fill in the blanks that, again, the bones are just kind of limited in what they can tell you. If they can find things out about their, well, they don't even know if they're cold or warm blooded. So they're hoping to maybe determine something as basic as that.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, something that would be able to, like, there'd be a lot more clues if you could actually look at the blood cells, I would think. So that's part of what is exciting for people to be able to tell. Although, it is true, I guess you got to destroy these fossils. So that's kind of like, I mean...
In some ways, I guess to me, it's just like, it seems like a good thing to do. Simply because, okay, haven't we seen enough T-Rex... bodies get assembled at this point that maybe we can spare one for the sake of additional information.
I guess, but maybe where do you stop? Like, you're going to keep dissolving all these fossils? I don't know.
I didn't say all of them.
Oh, but you heavily implied it.
I was implying one T-Rex.
Oh, but that, it always starts with one T-Rex.
It doesn't mean the Hadrosaurus that that she decided to kill, or the...
Well, it probably was already dead, to be fair. We don't want to be sued for libel here. Destroy the fossil, I guess you could say.
Hadrosaur.
But I guess, like, what if... in the future, we have better technology and we can like scan these bones or not bones, but the fossils to like get more clues about things than we could have otherwise with these kind of melted pieces. I mean, I don't know. I guess you never know, man. That's the way life is. You've got to take some risks, and I think it's pretty cool that somebody took a risk and actually figured this out because of it.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty badass to have some type of development like that go on. I mean, as Jeremy put it, he goes, holy shit, seriously, they might be able to figure out a way to have a Jurassic Park, really?
Oh my god, that's of course where everything goes.
Yeah, he goes, I am so, that he's like, I'm probably going to die before it happens, but come on, we're on our way, right?
Yeah, I just found it it's so weird to think that, like, these little things could survive for, you know, maybe hundreds of millions of years. It's just,
oh, yeah, because where was that,
I know that dinosaurs died out 65 million years ago.
Oh, so, yeah, the estimate of DNA is a half-life of just 521 years.
Yes.
So to figure out that, like, blood cells and things, and maybe some collagen inside of the bones has survived for like 80 million years.
Yeah, yeah. Like, yeah, 100 million years or so. That's, It boggles the mind that something could still be around. And I think it boggles the scientists' minds, too. Like, they're not sure why the heck this should still survive. But they thought, like, it might have been, like, iron somehow binding with the tissues I saw.
Yes. So yeah.
That seemed intriguing. I don't know.
Yeah, well, and I mean, that's just kind of wild in and of itself, to just try and figure out how something like this survived for that long of a time period.
Right, because, I mean, you know, you put something in, you seal something in, you know, Tupperware, it's going to last for a while, right? But you leave it in there for a month or so, it's not going to be doing too good anymore.
Right, and again, to go back to the maybe 100 million years old, yeah. I mean, that is some pretty seriously long storage. If I can't get stuff to stay in my freezer for long enough, yeah. What the fuck, man? What's got to be going on that it sticks around 100 million years?
Yeah, that's nuts. That's nuts out of talk. But somehow it did. So that would be curious. I mean, I'm sure that people would be lining up eventually to preserve their own bodies this way so that they could be resurrected at some point in the future when science gets to that point. But I don't know. I'm speculating here, but to me, I see a clear path. From here to there. But yeah, I guess I thought, like, a dinosaur fossil might be, like, the ultimate Tupperware, in a sense.
Evidently. Yeah. I mean, maybe they will try this with bones that are even older than dinosaurs. I don't know how many bones there are out there that are older than dinosaurs. I mean, it would almost be kind of cool if there was a spare, I don't know if they've done it with, what's the, a Neanderthal bone?
Yeah, those would be younger than dinosaurs, but still very interesting to look into.
Right. Yeah. I mean, again, like, you have the bone structure, but you don't necessarily have any tissue type matter to investigate.
No, you don't.
So that would be pretty cool to see.
It always bums me out to think that, like, there were Neanderthals around at the same time as there were, you know, us modern humans. And, just couldn't get along together, I guess. Couldn't make it work.
Oh.
You know? It would be just kind of crazy if there was, like, a different, I don't know, quote-unquote, race of humans on the Earth today. I just think that would be, that would be nuts. It would be like, I don't know why I keep going back to it, but it would just be like, a real fantasy world would be kind of crazy. But then, of course, we'd be like, whatever, it's, you know, just the way things are. Like, we would not take it for, we would take it for granted, Kevin. That's what I'm trying to say.
We take a lot of things for granted, Ken.
That's true.
One thing that people might take for granted... buildings.
You know what? We do. We should all be thankful for buildings.
Yes. And we should be thankful that they stay upright sometimes.
Well, yes. Especially when they stay upright, I'm thinking.
Well, that was one of the famous books in school, was How Buildings Fall Down. It was not How Buildings Stay Up, actually.
So it, I guess that's good. Once you learn that, you can kind of like do the opposite then and keep your building up, right? Is that the process?
Yes. Once you know how it falls down, you want to keep it upright.
Very good. So, these were, I don't know, I think I was, it was on my Chromecast one night, one of these pictures, and I was like looking at it, and it just was like so cool looking. I don't understand why people don't make buildings like this all the time. Kevin, can you explain to me why people don't make buildings like this all the time?
Well, one of the reasons is it's kind of expensive.
I was thinking that could be a reason.
yes, because this article in question, at least, that you got me to, I had actually seen. There are times where, because my job has architect in it, but I don't always necessarily get to do architect-y things, or at least those cool things that you learn in school, like designing a real building. You just kind of sign off on drawings and you keep on moving.
Yeah.
Maybe put together some puzzle pieces. These guys that have done these buildings really get the design. And I can honestly count on just a little over a hand and a thumb how many times I could probably say I actually designed something. The cantilever is what this article is all about. Mm-hmm. It's seven can't-miss cantilever commercial buildings.
Now, that is related to the cantaloupe, I've heard. Is that true?
No, not related to the cantaloupe at all.
Oh, all right. I was misinformed. So it refers to, like, basically part of the building is hanging out over the edge of something, right?
Correct. It's got to be off the ground is the prerequisite.
Mm.
You could even consider a balcony, something as simple as that, a cantilever.
Okay.
They were certainly stressing something more outrageous than a simple balcony in this article, that's for sure.
Yes. There's things that kind of look like Jenga blocks that have been stacked kind of at an angle.
Yeah, somewhat precariously, some might say.
Yeah, looking to be precarious, but actually a building.
Yeah, that is the one thing. There are a lot of ones and zeros going into this.
Ooh.
To come up with the engineering.
I like how you're bringing it back to our previous topic.
And just within the design itself for the graphics to try and figure this out. But the cantilever, really, the main problem is you need to have some type of structure below it to support it. And it's got to be very strong. Frank Lloyd Wright is very famous for the building Falling Water, which did not make this because, well, it's not a commercial building. So that is one reason it's not on here. But he kept on talking the engineers out of extra reinforcing in his famous building, Falling Water.
Yes, very famous.
Yeah.
And that's hanging over the edge of Falling Water,
Yes, yeah. He anchored the center of it to a gigantic rock that was there. He went out and walked the site and figured out where exactly he wanted to put things.
Yeah. And, you know, there's no visible supports here that I can see.
Oh, right. And that's the way it is with his building, too. But it's usually a beam or, in his case, it was concrete that was reinforced with steel.
Yeah.
And they've since had to place some extra structural elements at Falling Water to make sure it does not come down. because there was not adequate enough reinforcement in it, as the engineers had originally argued.
Oh, so they were able to see that they needed to fix it up there a little bit.
And they did that very recently, within the last 5 years, actually.
Gotcha.
That they've shored that up. But these buildings, they are definitely held to a different standard. All of these are very modern buildings. Because the one that they had at the top
Is that a real building, though? I was looking at that. I think that's an imaginary one.
Yeah, that is an imaginary building. That would be kind of tough to pull off.
Yeah. A little kid swinging on the bottom of the building as it was hanging over a ledge. Yeah.
Right. And the second building is similar in its Jenga-ishness.
Mm-hmm. I really like that one. Yeah. It's got... one coming out the side, and then another one looks like it's to the side of that, maybe?
Right.
Or it's actually passing through another one? Appearing to, yeah?
Yeah, it looks like there's a double with a third one coming through the top of the double.
And I'm noticing, you know, things are not straight, like, parallel here. The windows are not parallel to the edge of the building. It kind of moves in, it looks like.
Yeah, they almost have a the look of a you could really do a patio out there. Like if that glass opened, you could have a space out there.
Oh yeah.
Which would in itself be kind of an interesting balcony. That's like balcony.
A cantilever on a cantilever.
Actually it does look like there is the railing does go straight across there. So there is a little bit of a porch out there.
Oh, you're right. That's pretty cool. So I guess this is an example of a project that you would probably definitely want to be using AutoCAD versus paper to work with.
Well, it depends. I mean, you can't really calculate loads with this type of thing on CAD itself.
So you would
need more advanced engineering stuff than just CAD.
So would you need to be an engineer, you think, to design something like this, or just work closely with
it? If you are a good architect, you have a pretty good working knowledge of what a structure can and cannot do. You may not know the exact size. You can probably guess at it. I mean, there are tables that you could look at to be more precise. But you can put a pretty solid guess into it. And even just like, we just did a balcony recently for an office building. And I mean, we had to use, I believe it was a 12 or a 14 inch beam to hold it up. And I mean, that's nothing compared to what they're doing in these instances, which is all the more surprising and awe-inspiring, honestly.
Yeah. I mean, I guess it would look, you know, more ugly if they just had like a brace underneath there, kind of holding the building up, right? I guess that's why you use a beam there.
Yeah, it's a little more hidden. There is some, you can really put design into that, into the structural elements, honestly, because I think bridges do that a lot.
Mm-hmm.
In this case, they are trying to go for the more breathtaking, because when there's less support, it's more interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree.
And I think that at least with the bridge, people want to feel a little more safe than that.
Yeah, they don't want it to be too interesting when they're on a bridge. Yeah,
right.
That makes sense. But, yeah, people should check these buildings out. I mean, it's kind of like makes you jealous a little bit that unless you live in one of these cities, which...
I did like that one of the buildings was the McDonald's.
Oh.
which is in Germany, and it's a drive-through only. Huh. And it's an all-glass, and that's why I had seen it before. It really looks like... what was that thing? I feel like it was on Tatooine.
Oh.
There. It kind of... it's not a land speeder, but it kind of has that...
The car
crab shell the hover look.
The hover car thing that maybe Luke was riding around in or something.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, this almost looks like it's floating in a way.
It's a McDonald's and a gas station.
Yes.
Made out of all glass. And that's why I saw it. I think I'd seen the McDonald's end of this.
Well, that would be fun.
Unsurprisingly enough.
Wouldn't that be funny if you turned that in for a design for like a McDonald's that they wanted to to put in.
Oh, I would love to be able to do something like that. I mean, they have provided me with my very limited design opportunities. Those are not happening at the current moment. Hey, I got to design one that looked like an old school, the 50s McDonald's that has the saddle roof. It has the arches coming through it. I got to design an airport one that looked somewhat similar to that, and that was kind of fun to work on.
Very nice.
And one in your old stomping grounds. It was after you had vacated State College, Pennsylvania.
Oh, home of Penn State, yeah.
Yeah, home of Penn State. I got to actually design one there, so I mean, hey.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. I can actually say that's my handiwork without lying.
So, you know, on our show, we like to sample other people's handiwork in the taste of brewed beverages. Beer. Yes. Yes. To be specific.
Yes, there are plenty of machines that work in a factory.
That's true.
That are programmed.
To brew beer? I imagine they are.
Yeah. And this one happens to be from Marshall, Michigan. I tried their amber quite some time back. I really liked it. And I was trying to figure out what I was in the mood for today. And Dark Horse Sapient Trip Ale. So it's a Belgian triple is what this is. These are always multi goodness. Mm-hmm. And I enjoyed this. It actually was not as spicy as some triples that I've tasted, but it's very good nonetheless.
Yeah, we chilled it. It was a little bit warm at first, but I would say go for it cold, and it tastes pretty good.
Yeah, and the upside always to the triple, always high in alcohol.
That is true.
This one happens to be 9.5%.
Ooh, yeah.
I'm not sure that the IBU is worth even worrying about because it's probably in the teens and or low 20s. Yes. So yes, if you're a hophead, you can just stay right on away from this one.
Yeah, but don't try to finish off a six-pack because that's going to be bad news.
Yeah, things are going to get ugly and quick.
Yeah. Well, we managed to get through number 50 here, Kevin. People said we couldn't do it. I think we proved them wrong.
Yep, and we even had a new segment, the OPA Book Club, so I will continue maybe a little further in advance the tweeting of said topics.
Mm.
So that maybe we get a little more feedback, maybe people will throw out their information and we can talk about it here.
Yeah.
Any type of thing like that would be appreciated.
I think we would love to do that, yeah. So, Kevin, I guess it's been another successful show. I think we can say goodbye to our listeners for another week.
Yep, for @Gozer33, @DeFrango11, for the brand @StuntGranny. Have a good night.
Good night.